Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now, only on MGM Plus.
Before we get into it, this episode, folks, it's brought to you by BetterHelp. That's right. A little more serious topic to start this one off tonight. Barstool, we love, especially at LCB, we love our audience, our listeners. You know this. You've been listening to us since day one. We try to make sure you're a part of the show as much as we are. And we can't do this without you. You guys know that. We love taking care of our bodies, all of us, you know, eating right, exercising, all that. But much more to it than that. It's been a tough year on us with the minds, folks. It's been a year since pandemic hit. Over that at this point. It can be hard on everyone for many different ways. We're all going through stuff. I'm going through stuff weekly, daily. But sometimes you need to be able to talk to people. You need some therapy. And guess what? BetterHelp can help you out with that. Customized online therapy. It offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with therapists. You don't have to go see anyone. You don't see anyone on camera if you don't want. This helps you eliminate that excuse of, I don't have time to go see somebody. I don't have time to go do this. And, I've been there. I'm the king of that. I'm the king of that excuse. But that this helps eliminate that excuse. And this is a much more affordable way to get therapy than maybe doing in-person therapy or other ways you might have. And you can find someone to start communicating under 48 hours as well. Millions of people are seeing therapists and are getting help, helping find ways to, get the mind right, whether it's depression, anxiety, PTSD, list goes on. It can be something crazy complex that you want to tackle or something very simple. It doesn't matter. No matter what it is, if you're going through something, it's worth tackling. And this podcast episode today is sponsored by BetterHelp, and our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp, B-E-T-T-E-R, help.com/lights. That's BetterHelp, B-E-T-T-E-R, help, H-E-L-P .com/lights.
To infinity and beyond.
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth.
David, maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my new friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Two, turn up!
Ah! Rhodes? Where we're going, we don't need Rhodes.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
He hit our son!
Happy birthday, Polly.
Oh, no, I got me some. Well, how's the Joker, baby?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 346. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins. Hopefully this one, we don't record and lose this one like our last podcast. But that's history. Very nostalgic episode. We are reviewing. Reviewing is a tough word, though we'll review it. The Last Blockbuster, a documentary on Netflix. And then we're going to do a nostalgia draft. We're doing best defunct / discontinued things, brands, or places, which we've basically done before. We haven't done it, but we've talked about all these things before. But now we're going to put them in a fucking list and draft, which is awesome. What's happening other than that, though? What's going on?
Okay, so I want to note this. Just started a new YouTube series. Don't forget, you got to go subscribe to our YouTube. Make sure it's called What's Poppin'. First interview with Alex Honnold from Free Soul, who's super cool.
We're also just doing way more.
Yeah, we're also just doing a ton more stuff on YouTube in general. So make sure you subscribe. It helps us out a lot in the long run. So gonna note that. Other than that,
we are doing Godzilla vs. Kong on Sunday. I want to say that we watched it. Yeah. But we're going to review it on Sunday, give people time to watch it. So that's just that. So that next review is Godzilla vs. Kong. Don't ask me. Thank you.
Also worth noting, yes. And you know what? Right now, if you text me a screenshot of yourself subscribing, I will send you. And this is part of the cut pod that didn't make it. I took out all of my old video games, all my old 2K and NCAA games, and Jeff, I had Gabe basically made Jeff name which ones they were. I'm like, all right, NCAA Live 08, who's on the cover? And that was like a 20-minute segment from the last episode. So yep. You guys, sucks to be you. You never get to hear that. But if you tweet me a picture of yourself subscribing, I will send you by mail one of these random games. So that's our promo for that. And something else that I think we lost on the missed episode was Northgard, which I was talking to Tro about. An RTS, Northgard, very fun. I think, Tro, you should try it out. You'll like it.
I'm too deep in the Soulsborne universe, my friend. I've been completely consumed by these games. I used to just absolutely despise, but now they have converted me somehow. I don't know.
Too hard.
I don't know how it happened. No, Sekiro is too hard. These games are hard, but you can level up in these ones. You can get better. All you got to do is over level, and it's still hard, but you can still play through them, and they're very rewarding. I'm surprised I found myself playing them. And part of it's a function of the fact that the PS5 doesn't have any games. So I had to go to that like PlayStation Plus, and then I saw Bloodborne there, and I was like, okay, well, you know, that's a free game right now to me. I'm going to download that and play that. And it just got me into it. So I mean, long story short, PlayStation 5 needs some games, dude. Like actual PlayStation 5 games that aren't like 8 hours long.
When are they going to make the first 8K supported game? Right. Because none of them have been 8K yet. So I would very much like to see that.
I don't have an 8K TV. I'm not going to get
it. Neither do I, but I want to see like a YouTube, like 8K resolution clip. You know what I mean? Or whatever that's called. Or would we even be able to view that? Are we too poor to even view that correctly?
Yeah. So how does that work though? Because my screen isn't in 8K. So if you took an 8K clip, like what is it?
Have you ever seen like 4K clips? Like, I don't know if I have a 4K
monitor. Yeah, but my screen's 4K.
Like
my the Retina display on my phone is 4K. Right?
Some fucking guy from Geek Squad who's an avid listener right now is screaming at his radio the correct answer to this question.
It's not even a guy from Geek Squad. It's like a regular person.
Yeah.
It's just a guy.
Not dumb person knows the answer to that. Just let us know. I want to know where I'll be able to accurately see an 8K TV, just like screen resolution test without having to go to like a Best Buy or whatever.
No, Jeff. Do you remember when like TV, like Sony, and they probably still do, but like their sub brands carried weight. Like you see TV and be like, that's the new Bravia.
Yeah. I talked about Bravia some reason, but you're right. Like the Sony Bravia was like, oh fuck dude, mm-hmm. You can show Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Man's Chest and Blu-ray on that.
Turn on the motion smoothing. It looks like a soap opera. It's fantastic.
Christopher McQuarrie breaks through your house.
Which like is the best, because now it's like you thought that was the thing. It's like, holy shit, I'm watching this in Best Buy. It looks like Davy. That was always the one for me. It's always Davy, like a scene with Davy Jones, like with Jack Knight, Sparrow. Yeah. And you're like, this looks like it's real. And then you realize like, oh, that looks like shit for a movie. That's not what a movie should look like.
Sony. Oh, man. I don't know. I'm not the biggest TV guy, but like what I do is I don't pay attention to TV technology. And then when you can get like a really nice TV for $250 is when I do it. So I just like recently upgraded to like a 4K TV in my
main space.
One of our spare bedrooms. Like it, you know, we have a bedroom for the baby and then a guest bedroom and then another spare is like what I consider to be my office. But it's not like an office in the traditional sense where it's a pleasant place to work. It's more so like a bunch of glowing electronics, a bunch of good screens and some bad, but I got the 4K on that now.
I got, and you guys can see it behind me, but I got a new QLED 4K and it's pretty nice. It runs Ghost of Tsushima extremely well. And the only reason I got it is because like the light kind of sneaks in and I know QLED I think is really good at like being able to have a bright screen, even if it's bright out. So it looks good, whatever that's worth.
Jeff, I want to talk about a stupid movie I watched this week that I really loved.
Oh boy,
it's called The High Note.
Yeah, that's a good movie. That's not a stupid movie.
Well, it's a good movie, but it's stupid in the sense of it's like just it's intended to be like one of those uplifting feel good movies, right? Like it's not. You don't watch it and you're like, this is like.
So that's let's give context. That's a 2020 movie. It's on HBO Max. Dakota Johnson, Tracy Ellis Ross. Who else is in it?
Those are the two that I get. Fuck, yeah.
It was fine. I think I gave it a 71. I'd say I probably gave it in like.
I think I gave it high 70s.
I liked it. It has good music, and I think Dakota Johnson did. She does a really good job.
That's the name I forgot.
Yep. Tracy Ellis Ross is funny, and I do. It's a feel good movie. It's good performances. It's heartwarming. It makes you feel good. So if you're looking for something to pick you up, and you know you don't want to get you don't want to think too hard about what you're watching, I recommend The High Note, streaming now on HBO Max.
It is a perfect. I think if you don't take it too seriously, it is a great movie to watch. It almost reminds me of it's like a bad version of that movie that Nick Offerman was in. Do you remember what I'm talking about? The Hulu one.
No, a bad version. Recently, good
where it's
version.
Like him and his. No, like this is a bad version of the Nick Offerman movie, which was very good.
Oh, Heartbeats Loud. Hearts Beat Loud.
Heartbeats Loud. Yeah. Well, they're not overly similar in that, other than that they just both are use music to be more, try to be uplifting, but Heartbeats Loud does it extremely well, and this one doesn't really do it that well. But it's maybe that's the first comparison that came to mind.
It kind of reminded me of like Julie and Julia type vibes. Like not in any of the content, but just in terms of like, this is just what the movie's intended to be. You're just supposed to watch it and like enjoy it. Don't think too hard about it.
Yeah, well, we're about to talk about a movie like that on Sunday, big time. Don't think too hard when you're watching Godzilla, man.
Yeah, don't think too hard because you'll play yourself.
Article and make yourself look stupid, whichever that was that did that.
I mean, I guess I get. Which is not to say I'm not saying you can't not like it, because it very well could be a movie you don't like. But like, it's the overcomplicating of what the movie should or can be. Now, if you view it as a monster fight movie that isn't good, that's totally fair. I get that. But it's like the lack of character here is appalling. It's like they're not what they're trying to do. And I'm not saying that makes it a good movie just because it tries to be just a big dumb monster movie. But like, again, it's always to a point where it's like, all right, like at least understand the movie to a certain extent. And that's like why when we watch like kids movies, you have to kind of have that wall up where you're like, oh, this movie doesn't have any like deep, insane message. Like, yeah, well, it's Dora the Explorer. Like, you know, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, you have to like, that's the tricky thing of rating and grading.
That was I make it sound
like we're fucking doing brain surgery, but that is like the funny thing is like when you try and see every movie and rate and compare them, you have to view, you can't view everything in the same fucking lens, you know?
The last movie. I remember with King of the Monsters, I was like, yeah, I didn't like it because I think they tried to be like overcomplicated with too many like different plot things going on. And then other people were like, yeah, I didn't like it either. You know, they didn't have an overlying message about Godzilla. Like, no, we're not on the same side here. Like we don't dislike it for the same reason. There's very different lanes to overtake way too seriously a fucking Godzilla movie and to dislike what they actually did.
So part of me feels like just from like hearing the reactions you're saying is that because this is on streaming, the audience is going to be generally wider than folks who are on board for the Cranston one and the last one. And they just haven't been conditioned to understand what these movies are, because that was my complaint about the Cranston one. And the one after that is like, there's nothing going on here. You have to learn to love that. It's just two fucking kaijus beating the shit.
Well, this one is now like, if you thought it wasn't the first two, This is a full on that. It really strips down all of that, which again, I don't want to sound like I'm like gatekeeping this movie or whatever. Like, you can absolutely not like this movie, but it was like, there's always, I guess, kind of like a boundary or like a line that I think when you're talking about a movie, it's like, you know, if you overstep that line, you start to sound like a little ridiculous, right? Like, again, kids movies is always a good example of that. It's like if someone does a serious breakdown of
Sharkboy and Lava Girl, the ethos just isn't there.
Right. It's like, you can absolutely say it sucks, and you can absolutely say like, oh, it fails in these parts, but there's like, there's a limit to where you start to sound ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And this one definitely has that element, but I'm not saying anyone.
It's like the people that take Little League too seriously. Not to say that it's direct comparison, but it's just weird. Like, there's no, it's, you got to understand what you're grading, you know?
Yeah,
but taking Little League too seriously is fun.
Some people, for sure. The videos of dads getting in fights over their son's Little League position are always fun to watch.
Where else can I project my inadequacies onto my child? And that's a good form to do it.
In my Little League and when I was growing up, our one of the kids, like the main or pitcher one or number one in the rotation, was his dad was the coach. He got drilled with a comeback right in the nose, shattered his nose into a trillion pieces. Like he was crying on the floor, covered in blood, and his dad's just screaming at him, "Get the fuck up, Larry! Get the fuck up!" It's like that. That's the conditioning little league. Some little league dads project onto their kids.
So what I used to umpire. I played umpire for 3 years in high school. That was like my high school job. And as far as high school jobs, like it paid really well. It was like $30 a game. About there for 2 hours, you could work like 4 to 5 games on a Saturday and make good money out of it. And you work during the week too, but I like the thing about it is you do, it's weird. Cause like in Indiana, like I wasn't certified or whatever for high school, but I did all levels from like 8 year olds from like, you know, whenever they first start like pitching or whatever up to junior high. So I do junior high games like on a Thursday. And then on a Saturday, I might have like a rotation of like 11 to 12 year olds, wherever. Like, so you have to go from like a 60-foot base path to a 90. But one time, like the worst thing that happened to me when I was umpiring is, like when you're in umpiring school, which like, by the way, isn't like a real school, but it's like during
pet,
the training.
It's like pet training or pet training company.
They always, we always said like when you're with the younger kids, like, and let's just say like a kid fouls a ball off and you got to pull out a new ball and you're throwing it back to the pitcher. Like you have to make sure the pitcher is incredibly engaged with you, that you don't throw the ball at his face when you throw it back to him. And one time I did that and the pitcher was engaged with me. And then his coach yells like, "Hey, Timmy," or whatever, mid throw, gets the attention of the kid. And then I throw it. And then I do the weird, like, when like something bad's about to happen. Like, you know, you can't get the words out. He turns back to me and the ball hits him right in the face. It wasn't like a hard thrown ball, but it was enough to bloody his nose. So he gets hit in the head and I start walking out to the pitcher's mound. And then the coach dad like intervenes with me, like gets in the middle and he's like, "Just stay away." Like the reason the slap's so funny to me is because "he hit our son" is a lot like the way that dad reacted when I accidentally threw the ball at the kid. The kid was fine. Like he just had his nose bloody. Nothing was broken, but I felt awful about it. I've come to grips with it. It wasn't my fault, but it, you know, you still feel bad. And I don't know. I don't know why I told that story.
No, those events get seared in your brain. I have the exact same one, except that we were playing. Did you ever play the game Irish handball in gym? I don't know if that's actually even a real thing. It might just be like a colloquialism from Northeast or whatever.
No,
but it's just like it's like soccer and handball combined. And I once kicked a ball so hard, really fucking hard, and it nailed this girl right in the face, like bloody nose, black eyes, everything. And it's the moment of her, like right after the ball is out of the view of her face and like she realized how hard that hurt, like it is seared into my brain and it just gives me like shame every time I think about it.
Yeah, it sucks, man. Especially like because I was only 17 when that happened, so I was like a kid myself. But it was a formative moment and like kind of just understanding the dynamics of I don't know, safety and like I don't know. It was like a lesson to always like, you know, make sure, even though there's nothing you could do about it. Like I just like,
yeah,
from that point on, like I always took a few steps forward and threw the ball, like the extra 3 feet would like, not, I don't know.
There is, I love whenever like you hit someone with something or like something almost hits someone or, but you know, you're supposed to be like, "Oh, look out," or "Hey, the ball's coming at," like you're supposed to say something coherent, but you're right. It's always that noise. Yep. And then people get mad at you, like, "What the fuck was that?" It's like, well, it's like in that moment I was freaking out, you know, the ball was coming at your face. It's tough.
That's why four in golf is so effective, because that's a, you know, one syllable word you can, it's easy to blurt out. Mm-hmm. I just feel like four should be universally accepted as like something's coming at you.
Yeah, timber is too long. That's two syllables. The tree might have already killed someone by then.
Yeah, but
also people try to put it like a little, they try to pull a little like a twist on timber, like timber, yeah, and they timber. You know, it's like
just say, yeah, that guy's dead, man.
whenever I chop a tree, I always go, "It's going down. It's going timber. This is the night we won't forget."
That's in that library of songs you were talking about.
Yeah,
that's what I told someone today, by the way. They were about to pour a little alcoholic beverage before recording something, and I said, "Don't get too slizzard on your behalf."
Do you remember the other Far East movement song? Like a
G6?
And then the other one I think was Rocket Man.
Yeah. Or, Rocketeer.
Rocketeer. Yeah. It's like, you, my dear, you're a rocketeer. And Brian Tedder was that. Is Brian Tedder the One Republic guy? He was on that song.
You know what song I heard today for the first time in probably 10 years, maybe 15 years? Where Do You Go by Fort Minor.
Where did you go?
Feel wait, hold like on. I'll play a clip because it's going to be on the trivia. And so I'll play a clip. Nope, that's Snow Patrol.
What's the story?
Yep.
I don't even remember that. Anthem. I don't remember that song.
No, but that's the thing. That came and went like crazy. Like it was an anthem for 2 years and then disappeared from my brain forever.
Yep. All right. Let's move on. That
boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom.
We got some good news today. First, this one came down the wire before we started recording. Netflix going to pay up to $400 million for Knives Out 2 and Knives Out 3. Daniel Craig will reprise his role, but both movies will have brand new casts for him to solve crimes for. Somewhere, Kenneth Branagh is screaming. Just fucking screaming that Ryan Johnson just cucked his fucking Death on the Nile, Murder on the Orient Express, or Call Perot thing and made a cooler, more modern, hip thing that everybody... This news went wild today. People are fucking fired up about it. And the first thing I thought about was Kenneth Branagh is making those Death on the Nile, whatever movies. It's like, mother...
Yeah, dude, he fucked up by hiring an alleged cannibal, some would say. But that, among many other reasons why both of his On the Nile or Death on the XYZ movies have sucked ass.
You know what I think probably pisses him off? If he does care, which, you know, he might not care. He might not even know.
Yeah, he doesn't care. I am mostly kidding on that.
He's also an actor, and I mean, you know, that's the
saw Shakespeare
director and all those things. Like those guys aren't really and girls, and they're not really known for humility in all senses. So he might be mad about it, but I think what he's most mad about is he probably puts all this effort in this cool Perot character that he remembers from growing up reading the books. And then Daniel Craig just fucking shows up the day of filming and is like, I'm going to do an accent. Okay.
Yep.
Ryan, I'm going to do an accent. And Ryan's like, okay, what's the accent? He's like, I don't know, but just bear with me. I'm going to figure it out while we film.
What's your character's name? What's your character's name, Daniel? It's going to be Benoit Blanc. That sounds kind of like French too, just like Hercule Poirot or whatever the fuck his name is. No, it's totally different.
Like Daniel Craig, like literally shows up to the soundstage and or the house, and then drives like an old MG through the wall, and then gets out and is like, "I'm ready to film. I'm doing an accent. I've decided."
Yep, fucking, and it's a great accent. Like the character of Benoit Blanc was extremely compelling and funny. He is just so Daniel Craig that is so fucking charming, man. He could charm the pants off a goddamn snake. I don't know if that's an actual phrase.
I think we're like Netflix.
Wait, hold on. Pause. That's a phrase, right?
Charm the pants off a snake.
I've heard it.
Yeah.
Before. I think I've heard it before.
Yeah, charm the pants off a snake. All right, Trill, continue.
Okay, continue. Yeah.
I guess from a business perspective, I mean, this is something I don't think would happen pre-COVID, right? Because I just think the acceptability of like what you consider to be films that should be in theaters is. The lines have been blurred so much. I guess like maybe I'm just still in that mode when I hear Netflix film, I'm expecting something like Six Underground and everything we've seen that's been a Netflix production, some good and some bad. And like, yeah, there have been some prestige things that made to Netflix. But I think from like their standpoint, you know, I would rather spend $200,000 per movie or whatever it is, $200 million per movie.
Slightly different.
Whatever it is. Yeah, in thousands, by the way. All numbers are in thousands. Read it at the top of the financial statement, fucking idiot. And like shell out for a property that people already know and like rather than something like Red Notice is fine. People are going to watch that because of the big names attached to it. But this at least seems more of a, you've got a built-in audience for it. And it'd be interesting to see what they do with the cast. Because
Underground.
the Benoit Blanc character was fine, but he wasn't in the movie. He wasn't in it a whole lot compared to like everyone else.
He wasn't the star.
No, I mean he was the standout because of how ridiculousness. Rob Dyrdek is in the cast now. It's just everybody from Viva La Bam and Jackass. They're the new cast, but it'll be. I mean, there's going to be.
It takes place in Greece, doesn't it? Isn't that what we're looking at right now? I think someone had tweeted that the entire
place
in Greece. Yeah,
or it's going to be at least shot there, so you assume it's going to take.
Yeah, so everybody gets a vacation. And they're
sending the Viva La Bam crew to Greece.
They're going to send. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about these Netflix movies. Netflix is like, we're going to spend $200 million on it. And all of a sudden, Rian Johnson's like, it's in Greece. It's the movies in Greece now. I just said that it's happening. It's in, it's in Santorini. And it's going to be the most difficult production to get electricity to, but it's going to work out for us.
Dude, a picture of Bam Margera in Santorini with the blue roofs. I just don't even know how I process that picture. Like, it's not an unbelievable thing to think about, but like just him chilling in those pristine white houses would be just a beautiful picture. I would love that. I did think of a sort of my own version of what it was going to be. Do you want to hear it, Trill?
Yeah.
Okay. My thought for it was that it was going to be titled Under the Knife. And it was going to be who killed a famous plastic surgeon in a big city. I mean, thematically, I thought L.A. would work, right? Just plastic surgeon. But then he has all these suspects, right? His wife, who knows he's cheating on him. A client who he botched. Jealous work partner, stepson. His brother, who's mad because of inheritance. A competing surgeon who Doe was financing their malpractice lawsuit against. Like, kind of a la like the Hogan thing with, I don't know what his name, Peter Thiel or whatever. And then a social media star who was mad because Doe publicly said that they had work done. And then again, title, Under the Knife. I think it would work. And maybe for the third movie, since this is obviously in Greece, but still.
Well, it's like thematically, though. I mean, isn't one of the reasons people like the first one is because it had this this undercurrent of like this seemingly progressive family that was mad about their money being taken away by someone they essentially thought was lower than them.
Well, yeah, so that's why I think it'd almost be inverted here, right? Because like the character of Thrombey was so lovable and likable, rest in peace Christopher Plummer, but in this time point you're going to inverse it. So now the guy who's dead is an asshole who we wanted to be dead.
I like it. I think Rian Johnson, he definitely listens to the podcast.
He's actually read one of my tweets out loud on like a Vice video or something like that. I forget what it was for. It was a Knives Out thing, I think, mm-hmm. Right?
It was Knives Out based. It was about sequel titles.
Yeah, it was literally about sequel titles. And Rian Johnson had read my suggestion out loud. So just pointing out there, maybe he is a listener to the pod. We don't know.
I think he should cast me in Knives Out and I should be wearing the sweater.
Yeah, that's your face reveal? People are like, what the fuck?
That fat fuck in the Chris Evans sweater.
I need to look up the picture again now.
So that's that. Trailers. We had a couple trailers this week. The one I want to talk about, though, Star Wars The Bad Batch, the new animated series came out. That looked very cool. Guy Ritchie's Wrath of Man came out. But there's one I want to focus on, and that is Spiral from the Book of Saw. So we talked about this trailer last February, like after the Super Bowl. The new Saw spinoff from Chris Rock. He's the executive producer. Samuel Jackson's in it as well. I thought the teaser was cool, the one, because it was clearly like a new twist on the franchise that had been a little too much. The new trailer, I compared it to the nacho fries commercials from Taco Bell. Like there's a such a strange vibe to it. Like I immediately turned off from this. I'm intrigued because Chris Rock is producing it. I think that's cool. Like I said, comedic minds turn to horror and thrillers has worked out recently. So I'm intrigued by that, but this just felt, I don't know what it was, like the voiceover work, the clips they picked, it's just not a good trailer at all. Not true. You just watched it right before we recorded too.
Yeah, it seemed like a sloppy trailer. I'm not gonna take anything away from the movie. You can't always tell. It was a mess of a trailer. It was like the music box music, and you're hitting the beats of like, this is a horror movie trailer and the creepiness of it. Like, yeah, that's all there, but it's like people talking, Chris Rock talking, voiceover. Then you get the dramatic, pause scene, boom, and then you get a little bit of a scene with Samuel L. Jackson and Chris Rock, and it picks up again at the end of the trailer. He kind of dives into what you think you're going to get in the second or third act of the movie with some teasers there. But it was put together in a way almost to be as grating as possible. And to, it wasn't really a good sell for the movie for me, but it's, again, it's also a trailer, so I'm not going to put too much stock in it. It was an annoying trailer, and also made me want to play the Sega Dreamcast.
I really liked Chris Rock as like a serious role, because only because I've liked him so far. And I'm not fully caught up, but in his season of Fargo, I think he has like the chops to do stuff like this. And I think we've talked about this before, how it feels almost like it's easier for comedic style actors or comedians in general to go into drama versus the other way around. But I think he's good. But the trailer is really, it almost like it was cut and edited by someone who, you know, only strictly did commercials from like 2008 to 2012. And like, it just did not have a good vibe to it to help kind of not only express that it's going to be something that isn't similar to all of the sequel Saws, but something that is going to like, you know, kind of endear you and make you want to go watch it, especially with so many like great smaller horror movies coming out recently. Like, it has a lot of competition. They can't just ride the Saw name. So I don't know. They need to do a better job of doing their value proposition, or whatever you want to call it.
I feel like they can ride the Saw name, though. That's the draw of the movie. The draw of the movie is this Saw Chris Rock. Like, that's the draw of the movie.
There's a very interesting small change from the teaser to the trailer. The teaser said from the Book of Saw, and the Saw was in a new font, and the new teaser, the new trailer has the word Saw at the end in the old like Saw font, where the W is weird. I'm curious, like, that's like a very tiny tweak where I would love to hear what like the meeting was on that. It's like, hey, we're getting bad feedback on the
phone. We got a franchise already. We already got a logo. It's on the DVD collection box art. You're going to undo all that work? You really going to undo all that brand equity we put in the Saw and the Jigsaw killer and his sister, wife, or whoever killed for him and stuff? I made the movies. I don't even fucking remember what happened.
I forgot.
I just know that I made the logo in coral paint or whatever it was at the time, and then it was fine, and then now you want to replace it with something that looks like it's an ad for a direct-to-consumer product. No thanks.
I just know that Donnie Wahlberg sits on like a block of ice at one point. That might not even be true either.
What were some of the good traps? The laser trap and the bear claw are the two I remember. The one where it was like a bear claw on the head, and the other one where like the laser flayed their head like a fucking apple corer. That was cool one. Those are the only ones I remember, though.
It's me. I'm back, guys.
Do you remember that video?
I'm the Jigsaw Killer. It's me. I swear to God.
That was an OG YouTube video where the guy is like, he's on the very tiny tricycle and he's dressed up as Jigsaw. And he says, "You want to play a little game?" And the bike breaks. Yeah, the tricycle like breaks underneath. That was like a very short, like 6-second YouTube video.
Classic. Yeah, that's old. Wow, that just unlocked a whole section of my brain right there. That was a good one. Shoot. I remember the first Saw, though. What a moment that was. You want to talk about a movie that was just really engraved into the cultural lexicon when it released? Like, I remember, I think it came out when I was in, what year was that? Like, probably 2005? I don't know if that's right.
Yeah, it seems like right around that time. I can't remember if I was in college or high school. I feel like I was in college because the big horror thing with The Ring when I was in high school.
2004. Yeah, so 2004. I was going to say, I remember being, I think, in middle school, and just everybody was talking about that movie. Everybody. Like, you're like, yo, my brother came with me to go see Saw. It was so fucking good. You got to go watch it. And like, I was a pussy and just not even come close to watching that until I was in high school.
I remember.
Well, yeah, it's funny because that's like that's the audience for most of these movies, I feel like, there's a lot of built-in audience. But these horror movies, as much as we shit on them or whatever, and some are good and some are bad, like, a lot of the historical, like, I'm just making this up, so I don't want to say anything. My feeling is that, like, it just appeals to kids going to the movie theater on a Friday night to see a gory movie. Like, that's, maybe that's the way horror movies have always been. Like, that's kind of the thing. It's like, your 17-year-old brain is kind of wired to want to see some of this, like, weird shit. That's why Saw took off, because it definitely, in the context of 2004, was pretty brutal and weird.
The I went to go see, where was I? I was in I was in College Station, Texas. I was going to a golf tournament in high school, and our coach said we're gonna go see we're going to see Saw 3, and we got there, and he changed it up on us. He said, now we're going to see Letters of Iwo Jima from Iwo Jima. We saw instead.
The whole Corps of Cadets is in the...
Why?
Seeing the Saw 3 with their Aggie boots on.
Doing their yell chant after it, yeah.
Your teacher's like, no, we can't be in there with them. They're just gonna do cheers and all the time. Won't be able to watch the movie because they're doing A&M cheers all the time. They brought the collie with them. She always goes everywhere.
The next thing on the list here, Obi-Wan Kenobi cast. The Obi-Wan Kenobi series, Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi, that's going to be filming soon.
Noah Centineo is Obi-Wan Kenobi. I can't believe
unbelievable.
It. This was just crazy news.
No, dude, don't troll people like that. We all know it's Skylar Gismondo in the movie.
Joel Edgerton, as we knew, obviously he's back as Uncle Owen. We knew Hayden Christensen shouldn't be playing Darth Vader. Probably some flashbacks as well as Anakin Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Moses Ingram, Bonnie Pise, I don't want to say that. Apologies. Song Kang, Benny Safdie is in it. Simone Kessel is in it. Great last name for being in a Star Wars show. Right. O'Shea Jackson Jr. is in it. Rupert Friend. And Peter Quinn. The one that kind of surprised everyone, Kumail is in it. Kumail Nanjiani's in it. So a lot of random names. You have no idea who they're going to play. It's set, I think, 10 years, they said, after the events of Revenge of the Sith. You got to figure they're going to have to really age up Ewan McGregor on this one.
Yeah, right.
Gotta bridge that gap. Trill, thoughts?
I hope Kumail plays a Jedi, but he's like a Jedi in a tank top, like just a sleeveless shirt, and he's just the most like visibly jacked Jedi that's ever been depicted in the Star Wars universe. He's wearing 5-inch inseam like Jedi shorts and just swinging a lightsaber around like a greatsword lightsaber because he's so jacked.
He's got Claymore. He's got two-hander. Hell yeah. That would be awesome. It is cool that they were able to get... Like, Edgerton is a huge name now at this point. He obviously wasn't when he originally played Uncle Owen. And Bonnie P.S. or whatever her last name is. I don't mean to be a little. I just don't know how to pronounce it because I'm an idiot. She is what played Aunt Beru, right? And, like, that's cool to get all those people back and are now naturally aged up the same as Ewan McGregor. And some of the new names are cool. Former LCB interviewee Benny Safdie. I mean, that's a great name. Not only is he a good actor, but...
You know what happens?
I love to see
Safdie brothers in Star Wars means we're one step closer to something happening.
Yeah, Sandler and
No.
Pattinson in Star Wars?
No. Casey Neistat in Star Wars. The Safdie brothers' best friend, Casey Neistat. Yeah,
that's right. I actually much prefer both Pattinson and Adam Sandler being in Star Wars. Believe it or not,
possibility.
Somebody's like reviewing Star Wars, and they're like, "Man, I really love the CGI on that alien." like, what do you mean?
That's dude. No, he's just vlogging the entire time.
This is really believable. Like, I'm glad they went back to the practical effects.
he put a fucking like GoPro strapped onto a Bantha while he's writing it.
Oh my god. That's pretty cool. Another casting thing, Russell Crowe is going to be in Thor Ragnarok. What we don't know, assumption is probably a cameo. Melissa McCarthy is cameoing as well. So don't know. So not going to sit here and say, oh, who's he playing? You just don't know. But it's I kind of love that Taika Waititi just puts these people in this, like, he's just like, whatever, like, these are people I like, I'm putting them in the movie. Matt Damon, just throwing them all in.
You might as well.
When you have
so people want to see what this is the fun franchise now. Not that they're all not fun, but this just kind of seems like the, let's just try it out. Let's just do more fun things. I like the leaked pictures from that production that you won't let me talk about in the podcast, though. I think that was pretty neat.
I don't want to talk. Talking leaks.
I'm not going to talk about the leaks. I'm just saying, I'm a big leak guy. I like leaks. I like spoilers.
You fucking love spoilers.
I got to have it. Yeah, I got to have spoilers. I got to start watching a movie and then immediately look up the Wikipedia page and 15 minutes into the movie, read the whole plot synopsis.
I was going to say, you wait until the end of the movie. I would be shocked if you weren't already deep before the first act was over.
A lot of movies I watch, I'll like go on Wikipedia and read the plot summary of the movie in the first like 15 minutes of the movie.
We didn't say this, by the way. This was a note, good note from our producer, Tyler Goochman. He said, since we lost recording, we didn't know we enjoyed Falcon and the Winter Soldier's second episode more than the first one. So just want to note that. But
watch the breakdown video on our YouTube once again.
Yeah, that's Marvel stuff. Amanda Seyfried's going to play Elizabeth Holmes now in the Hulu series covering Theranos, because we know Kate McKinnon left that project. So now Amanda Seyfried.
Oh, no. Please don't go.
Yeah, I just like Yoda quotes are really inspiring.
See, I like Kate McKinnon. I don't like the way SNL uses her.
No, I don't like Kate McKinnon. I thought she would have been perfect for it.
But here's the thing. I thought the same thing. I thought it was sheerly an SNL thing and that she was just funny and other stuff. But every other movie I've seen her in and every other property, I haven't liked her in that either. Like, I just don't know what it is. There's something about maybe the way her comedy has evolved over time. I've just liked her significantly less as time has gone on.
I don't know. I like her a lot. I don't like how SNL is just like, Kate McKinnon's going to play a famous person. And I think she's more talented than just... The joke has become like, hey, look at this famous person Kate McKinnon's playing. So I don't think I would have hated Kate McKinnon as Elizabeth Holmes, but also Amanda Seyfried is incredibly accomplished, and I'm excited for her in this as well. I thought there were multiple projects. What did you say this was, the HBO one, Jeff? Or because I thought Jennifer Lawrence was going to play Elizabeth Holmes at one point. Is this like a different project? Or
that's the Adam McKay one, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is the one based off the podcast, ABC podcast.
So can you is that how it works now? Like, one person can buy rights of the book and then make it off of Bad Blood, and one person can buy rights out the podcast? Or
yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Or somebody can just do an Elizabeth Holmes movie because they already know the story. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but that's a solid point. Maybe, I guess I would imagine that makes that one easy because it is based off two separate things. It's the angle, still a true story. And I guess that's it on news. Anything else?
I just it's going to be wild when that first trailer drops and Amanda Seyfried's doing the voice. Like that's what we're not prepared for. Like
side by side. We'll try to have the side by side of her actual voice and the imitation voice.
Well, I mean, and you know, I don't want to make fun of the voice, but it is.
Her voice is fake. Make fun of it. What do you mean?
Yeah, but no,
it's exposed.
Lazy. It's lazy. It's hack.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the impression all the time. It's hacky.
It's hack humor. It's not that funny. Yeah.
It's more so the it's kind of like, you know, when you do impressions of somebody and you go overboard and it's like almost like that's too much. It's like, how do you balance? How do you walk that tightrope when you're trying to do a serious dramatic depiction of somebody and the voice is already like somewhat comical? You know, like. That's what I'm going to be interested in, because
true, it's like she's doing a parody voice essentially of someone who was like, doing a parody voice.
Yeah, it's like how do you that's why she's an actress, right? Like that's her entire job to figure that out and do that, and also the director's job to do it. But like that voice has to be, good, or else I could see something happening where like the trailer drops and then everybody's talking about how ridiculous the voice is, even though it sounds very close to the real voice. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a way they could do it. It would be funny if they just have her with the same exact voice when she's like 5 years old, like have her 5-year old actor doing like walking around like, I was late to kindergarten today.
It'd be funny if they had her doing like internal monologues, but it wasn't that voice. It's like,
yeah,
I'm wondering what to eat. Should I have a tuna sandwich?
I prefer egg salad. Or just random, and then the inner monologue. Wait, inner monologue is also that voice, or regular voice you're saying?
Who's playing? Do we know who's playing the dude who was like the
financer?
Her like right hand man.
Hulu Theranos.
And also, like, according to the book, maybe her romantic partner at the time.
Sonny.
It's like Sonny something.
Chbalwani.
Yeah. Fuck. Really was just the. It was, Yeah, no, we don't know. We don't know. Not yet. Anyway, talk blockbuster. The last blockbuster. The documentary came out in December. It's on Netflix now. It's the story of the last Blockbuster in Bend, Oregon. Also the story about Blockbuster and some of the reasons why it failed, which a lot of it has to do with the financial crisis, 2008, the recession, all that. Some interesting notes, some things that will help you understand what happened to Blockbuster. But also they have some celebrities in it. Kevin Smith is in it. Jamie Kennedy is in it. Voiced by Lauren Lapkus. yeah. Wrong Missy herself. Adrian, who's in it? Adam Brody's in it, not Adrian Brody. Ron Funches is in it. Paul Scheer.
Levine.
Brian Posehn.
Brian Posehn.
The guy voices Obi-Wan Kenobi, so too. So you got to say it. You got to say it. Sam Levine.
Also, just an incredible amount of Doug Benson.
Oh, too much. There was an overflow of Doug Benson from the very start.
Just arguably, and I'm sure he's a nice guy, and I would like Doug Benson. There is too much Doug Benson.
Doug Benson looks like a Richard Scarry character at this point. Like just the
eyes, man.
The friendly, like milkman tiger character that brings you your milk every day in the busy world of Richard Scarry. Like he's very fun. He's very friendly looking.
No, he is. Yeah,
I've seen him live.
I remember him Last Comic Standing is what I remember him probably from the most.
I remember him from Super Jaime.
Also the VH1 shows where you like they comment on like the nostalgic things.
Which is perfect because this was a 90-minute version of that.
Yeah. This I think this is honestly one of the best docs I've seen in a while.
Okay, you scared me for a second.
This is 86 minutes. It's about 56 minutes too long. There was a point where they told a story, and I was like, oh, like, you know, this was nice. And then I looked at the time, and I went, holy shit.
Exactly, yep.
Like, there's a whole 40 minutes left of this thing?
Yep, nailed it. That was the exact – I hit that same exact moment. I think probably about like a third of the way through, I'm like, oh, okay, we're getting close to the end now. That was quick. And then I'm like, oh, what? There's literally like an hour left to watch. What left is there to really tell?
Because
like the way they tell it is like I like structurally how they put stuff together, like how the visuals, like how they're showing us the way stuff worked and all that. But like how did they condense the story this poorly? It was incredible.
Yeah, it was pretty unfocused, I think, and it was enjoyable. Don't get me wrong.
It's whimsical and light.
Yeah, I mean, take it for what it is. Like, and here's the big takeaway from this movie, right? Like, when you realized it wasn't going to be that serious of a documentary is when they started talking about, like, corporate raiders getting brought on board, but they didn't spend much time on that.
Yeah.
Like, because you could have made... The thing is, you had a choice to make. Like, you could probably go into this and do a pretty interesting story about how this company got ruined by, like, you know, the restructuring and loading them up on their debt, and you know, some of the management decisions to be made. But like, because this movie was this was more intended just to be like a people you know trademark talking about Blockbuster, and for that, I can't knock it too much because it does that. It doesn't go like Lauren Lapkus talks about it. She's like, and Carl Icahn came in and the rest is history. And I'm like, I want to know more about that.
Yeah.
I want to know more about what happened at this company at that point in time. The other thing that I thought, like, if you had like a real documentary that nobody really challenged them on, was the former CFO, you know, was like a talking head or like an interviewee for whatever. And you know, I thought his appearance was pretty interesting, but when he made the argument that Netflix didn't kill Blockbuster, it was actually the fact that Blockbuster didn't have enough capital to compete with Netflix. I'm sorry, Netflix killed Blockbuster. Like, you can't say like, well, Blockbuster didn't have any money. Like, it's like, you know, I know they were saddled down by all this stuff, but they closed stores after filing Chapter 11. Like, a lot of their business was not tied up in a viable business model. And like, if they would have had the money to like quote unquote compete with Netflix, they still would have had to make decisions about the actual operations of their stores. And for the stores that were, you know, franchised or whatever, like the closure of them, I just like, I get what they are saying there. Like, and I think that argument is technically true, but I thought it was like a little too simplistic to just almost say like, it was just trying to be a gotcha point. Well, you might've thought Netflix killed Blockbuster. Well, the truth is Blockbuster got ruined by the inside. But then to make the argument, it's like, well, Blockbuster would have competed if we actually would have had the money, but you didn't. So you lost. You didn't.
But that's what I think for them was their point to be like, yeah, we're not just like, you know, sucking Netflix off, even though this is a Netflix doc, was to not say that Netflix destroyed Blockbuster. I think that was like, you know, they're, see, we're being a little bit partial here, but it's just not true. It is they like you were saying, they were almost entirely tethered to a model that was not going to work in going into the 2010s.
And it's not that Netflix killed Blockbuster specifically, right? I agree. Like Netflix did not directly kill Blockbuster, but there has been a shift in the way people consume, buy, sell, trade media. And it's affected. I mean, it's the reason you walk into GameStop and the entire 75% front of GameStop is Funko Pops and the entire back end is used games, because they've made the strategic decision that like, if people want a new game, the risk out there is they're just going to download it. It's the reason when you walk into Best Buy, that entire middle section of that business used to be CDs and DVDs. And now it's all Google Home stuff. It's like, there's been adaptations there. And so the bigger point, I think that like, you know, they missed in that wasn't like, it wasn't really that like Netflix killed Blockbuster. It's that like, this is an outdated mode of consumption for people. But I think you could have tied that, and they kind of tried to do that at the end. Like, that's the big point, is even though it's an outdated mode of consumption for people, Blockbuster still, like in terms of like being a consumer facing business, was still like, It was very tangible, and you're missing the experience is what I'm trying to get at. Like, yep, the convenience killed the experience, and they tried to tie that at the end. And I think the documentary would have been stronger had they gone into that a little bit more, but they made the decision to do 15 minutes of Doug Benson going into the Blockbuster.
And Bender,
I will say,
texting Kumail
when he pulled out Super High Me, I got a little excited.
Yeah, two versions, right?
The unrated version of the director's cut of Super High Me. I think it was very face value, but I don't know if that was necessarily even the intention. Like, if they just wanted to make, you know, a feel good nostalgia movie, I think that in that sense it was sort of a success, because
yeah,
I think almost everything across the board, like going back into the old history, like I feel like I learned some stuff about Blockbuster that I didn't know. A lot of the stuff I already did know, because like I went out of my way to research Blockbuster or anything. I think it's just common knowledge stuff. But they, you know, they did make me feel like that nostalgic feeling in my stomach of wanting to go back to a Blockbuster. Like the ASMR at the end where they're playing with the cassettes, like I'm like, fuck man, I want to hold a VCR again in my hands like that. And the way they were describing it, you know, like, hey, this is something tangible, this is something real, and the weight of it just felt so great. Like that gave me a good nostalgic feeling. And if the goal of it was simply that, then success in my book. Also, they did show me something I didn't know before, which is that the guy that created the cheesy gordita crunch was the fucking CEO of Blockbuster at one point. He fucked up everything by not buying Netflix. What the fuck? That's one of the best decisions ever made in history of mankind, and one of the worst.
Yeah, but here's the thing about the Netflix thing is I don't fault them for passing on Netflix, because that original Netflix business model was
fucking mail-in
shit.
DVDs was stupid. It was so
like,
dumb.
The thing is, what they missed was what Netflix did is Netflix went to streaming and they did it really well. And at that point in the early 2000s, when someone said, okay, we mail you DVDs, like, I mean, you should have had the foresight that eventually you'd be able to download all this shit someday. But like, for them to say like, oh, you want to buy this like business that we send stuff out, like I don't fault them for either saying like no, or we can do that themselves. Like they move too slowly. And then, yeah, that was the CFO guy's point, right? In terms of him coming back and saying like, you know, we had traction and this and that, we were doing this and that, like we just ran out of capital. And like, part of that to me, like the reason that like it was like listening to a coach say like, yeah, we were driving the ball down the field, we were gonna score, we just ran out of time. Like, that's the game. It's It's like you just didn't adapt. And I will also defend Blockbuster in terms of saying, like, going back even to them talking about like record stores and prior, you know, family owned video stores, which Blockbuster, you know, like killed and all that stuff, is like, there's a very human element to going into a store and experiencing and touching and looking at covers and making decisions and having to, you know, allocate your time and your consumption to, you know, making the right decision. And I thought they like went too much. Like, I've never asked a Blockbuster employee for a recommendation. Like,
yeah,
I like maybe at like, if I'm in a music shop, an independently owned music shop, or like an independently owned Vizio store, like I trust that person to do that. But like, if it's a Blockbuster employee, like they're working at Blockbuster, I don't want to bother them.
How I saw the movie Sex Drive, my friends, the first time. We were like, hey, we want like a kind of bad but funny movie. And this person behind the counter in Cedar Park, Texas, by, right off Lakeline, no longer there, obviously. It's not the last Blockbuster. She's like, oh, this movie's really sick and twisted.
some 45-year-old man recommending this movie to like 17-year-old kids.
Here,
anyway, sorry.
This would be a fun game. What have your childhood Blockbusters been turned into? Because mine got turned into a retro fitness, and it just, the layout just made the convenience of that gym so bad. It just was not in the, it was just not, the layout just sucked.
Dance studio.
I don't remember, because I moved around so much. I had a bunch of childhood Blockbusters. The one I remember was in Carmel, Indiana, and it was by this old Kroger that got converted into a convention, not a convention center, but like an event center called the Fountains. And I'm sure that whole shopping center has been torn down and replaced with condominiums or whatever.
And then see the one in Plainville, Connecticut, for me, that's like the one that I grew up like going to get Star Wars and stuff. That's a CVS now.
Oh, wait, but they closed that Blockbuster and they opened up one in front of Marsh on the other side. So I'm sure now that's like a Zoe's Kitchen or something.
Probably. Anyway, I'm sorry. You had another point, Troll.
I mean, the movie, for as much, like, I don't want you to get the impression, like, I enjoyed it, right? Like, this movie's not, it gives you threads of like things you wish they would go down, because I think there's a lot of things that like are extremely relevant to stuff happening today in terms of like, one, obviously, like, I don't think the Blockbuster situation seems that dissimilar to what happened with Toys R Us, and the reason Toys R Us got driven out of business or drove out of business. Like, it's a combination of a business model that's being eaten by other things, but it's also the combination of, you know, corporate structure and questionable leadership decisions, and also capital structure decisions. This is obviously going to continue, but I think the bigger thread, like, that really got me thinking was just, you know, for all the convenience we have with like streaming and being able to download any movie on demand that you want, or like get a video game and have it download within an hour, I think there's something we really like lose in the whole like thought process of like actively having to seek out and decide upon what we want to watch. And I think, you know, when you stream, you get this whole paralysis and maybe it leads to nothing. But when you go to Blockbuster, I think like, that still led to like a little more thoughtful, like, you know, choices you had to make around like what you consume. And I think part of that, like, and how you allocated your time and money behind like the consumption of like what you wanted to watch, I think that was like, that was a special experience. And I think that leads to like a lot of good memories in terms of like how you feel good about finding your favorite series on your own. Like, maybe you're in a Blockbuster and you saw it and you picked it out, and then that led down this hole where you became a fan for whatever. Yep. And I think that interaction with like the physical space and actual physical media has been lost. And I don't think this has been lost in the terms of like, there's some big, like, you know, void in humanity because you can't walk into a video store and get it. But at the same time, like, I do think it was a fun experience, and I think it was a formative one if you were a kid. And, you know, now you're just presented with a plethora of decisions, and it almost seems paralyzing. So I mean, maybe it's old man yells at a cloud, but part of the nostalgia for me was just thinking about like how important your choices and like what you're going to
were
for one night.
Very
like
true.
You didn't want to fuck it up. You fucked it up. You were stuck with a shitty game for a whole weekend. Or if you fucked it up, you're stuck with a shitty movie. And you know, we don't really have that anymore. In fact, I think we have the opposite where there's so much information on stuff to watch on online. It kind of leads you down this path to consume the same stuff as everyone else. And of course, you know, we talk about Disney all the time, but I don't know, like, it almost seems like unimportant in the grand scheme of things. So don't get me wrong, but it just got me down this path of thinking like how much of my youth was spent on like deciding between things to consume and like actively having to research what it was about versus now it's just like press button.
Before I finally just, I'm in the store for 30 minutes. My parents like, let's go. And then I just rent Return of the Jedi again. They just but like, you're right. Cause it's that decision where you don't want to fuck it up. And I think that also led to so many like stronger opinions on things. And we find that with ourselves now, even on streaming, right? Like you watch a streaming movie and yeah, maybe we don't like it, but our, like, maybe not as much off. Maybe we might be a bad example. Cause like, this is like, especially for me and Kendrick, this is our job. So like we, with strong opinions and like having our full thoughts are kind of required. But for the most part, like in general, if you don't like it, you just kind of go down the next thing on Netflix or Hulu or Disney Plus or HBO Max, where like, you're right. If you rent that movie and you spent money and you spent time in Blockbuster, you were now stuck with a pile of crap for you fucking blew it. Like you
got Weekend at Bernie's 2 for the entire weekend.
you're
sitting in the clamshell.
So like, not only did you not like it, now you really fucking don't like it because you wasted every resource on it.
I think almost to that effect, like it just almost makes liking a movie or a series or whatever almost a little bit less consequential because like for example, like a series I really like is The Last Kingdom, which is on Netflix. Like that's a series where if I had physically had the copies of that and like had made the investment of, you know, going to pick it up at the store and had the physical copies, I would be like over the moon recommending it like nonstop to everybody. Like, you gotta go rent this. You gotta go rent this series. But like, because I have the opportunity to like, the second that's wrapped, go watch Vikings. Or the second that's wrapped, go watch a different series or go watch a different movie. I feel like it kind of does take away from that experience of feeling like you really did find like something unique and, you know, different than something that maybe other people hadn't found before, or even just something that you just fucking like. And it just, I don't know, maybe watching this made me appreciate that feeling a little bit more. And I do appreciate it that it was able to do that. But I think my biggest two knocks on this really just are that the runtime is just too long by a large margin. And it really just didn't dive deep into like the actual, like more nefarious parts of it. Because, you know, like Troll was saying, like there's like they were hiring fucking corporate raiders onto the board. Like people were doing seriously fucked up stuff that lost people their jobs, that bankrupted a company. And it was in a lot of cases, not even just with Blockbuster, with other companies, for the point of like profiting up like guys that higher up. So like to get a better, deeper dive into that, instead of just being like, you know, now I want to say a Netflix propaganda piece, because I feel like they went to extreme efforts to try to not do that, even though it kind of ended up being that way. But to be that plus just a nostalgia trip, like, I want a little bit more, and maybe a different documentary series will do it a little bit deeper, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I agree. I think I actually, and like, I hate commenting on like very technical things and saying how I think could have done better. Cause I mean, I don't know. That feels very like armchair quarterback, but I think the editing was odd here. I feel like expanding on the Blockbuster story from start to finish and splicing in the Ben thing throughout would have been better, because it's a little like jarring. I'll throw our favorite word. The back half of the movie is just the Bend Oregon stuff.
Switch,
which it just kind of full stops, and it's just like it's a whole different thing. You're like, I feel like they could have mixed this up a little more intriguing.
It's I mean, and I really like the folks who run that store.
Yeah,
but it's the least interesting part of the movie. And it's not,
except for going to Target and getting the fucking DVDs. Yeah, I actually was very interested by that.
That was sick.
Your supply chain is walking into Target. I mean, that's the thing though, is you know, the story of it being a last Blockbuster is interesting, but it's kind of like the day in, day outs are very similar to the operations of any other small business. Right. And I mean, them going to Target to supply up is like, not, I mean, that was interesting to see, but I think in the context of the larger Blockbuster story, it's like, splicing them out to like, you know, show a Blockbuster still in operations is pretty interesting, But, you know, focusing entirely of that, like, I don't think, you know, outside of them being the last blockbuster, like, there's anything interesting in the actual, like, camera in the store, right? Like them going in, like Doug Benson going in saying, wow, there's movies here, there's popcorn here. Like, yeah, it's a blockbuster. Yeah, but yeah. Like, I mean,
you I'm gonna text Kumail.
Look, I got a membership card. Like, yeah, it's the last blockbuster. That's the name of the movie. Like, I get it. Like, you're gonna get a blockbuster experience when you go there. Like, obviously, the owners, like you, and when I say it's the least interesting, like the owners were fascinating in terms of just them operating the store. But I'm just speaking in terms of, like, if you look at the entire story of the rise and fall of that, like, that operation's being used to, like, drive home the point that, like, this was once an empire, I think is a good narrative tool, but it's not the full story. And therefore, like, the focus of it shifting, it should have a lot of focus because it is the only one, but shifting over to the back half of the movie, I think, like, it really made it lose a little head of steam. So, you know, like, but you got to do it. Like, that's the catch of the movie. The problem is, like, once you get there, you realize, like, yeah, this is a blockbuster. I mean, they have some Russell Crowe memorabilia in there, whatever. But
the Doug Benson thing came way too late, too. You're right. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's like, oh, it's more on Paul Blart. Oh, it's movies. Like, yes.
Yeah, Doug.
Like, this isn't
a blockbuster.
I mean, and this isn't. This isn't like somebody is taking a time machine back to like 1725 to visit a doctor's office in London, where they're like, oh, this is the drill tool used to extract blood from people's heads. Isn't that weird? Like, this was something,
we all remember this.
This was something like 20 years ago. Like, everyone, like most people, like who are of age to navigate to Netflix, like at some point in their life remembers this. I think the fascinating part of it is how quickly it went away. And, you know, I think there are various things, like we talked a little bit about, like the whole like 2000s being a pivotal point. But then there's also the point in the movie where they talked about how Blockbuster basically just fucking crushed small private mom and pop stores with the whole rev share stuff. So that's another point you can talk about in terms of, like, when you talk about, like, you know, the long story of this, it's like, this leads to consolidation. Everything consolidates into a blockbuster, and then everything gets decimated by what happens since, and you're left with nothing. Like, I think that's the real interesting narrative of this. It's not like you're left with nothing, but it's just like, that's the arc of the blockbuster story. And I think you use that store in Bend, Oregon to highlight the fact that, like, there is still limited demand for this real human experience of walking in somewhere, physically picking out what you want, and then walking away and having to return it. But ultimately, I think I don't think that's a widespread want for most people. I think as much as people talk about, like, oh, they miss Blockbuster, it's just, I don't think people are willing to give up the convenience of being able to download Hotel for Pets.
Mm-hmm.
Hotel
it was
for Dogs,
cool seeing
sorry.
Some of the titles that were there. Well, they were there because I think I saw, what do you call it, Running High? I think I saw Atomic Blonde.
The one thing I really did like was the guy who, like, kind of obviously did not like John Oliver at all, but was trying to be diplomatic
yeah.
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he's like that. Not my type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what do you say? He's like,
I'm not the demographic.
Not the demographic. Yeah. I'm not the right demographic.
And then
that.
It's like, you know, while the attention was great and we appreciated it, like, I had to tell him that, like, you know, stores may not going to be around. Like, so he kind of knew that, like, you know, they were like trying to help, like, there's this fundamental shift, this wave that's unstoppable in terms of, you know, holding on. And I think, like, I hope that Bend, Oregon store stays open. Like, I really do. Like, I really enjoyed that family. Like, I hope they do really well. It's not me saying, like, you know, they don't, you know, it's going to be phased out in the same way everything else is. But I also think there's, I don't know. I just think there's more to that Blockbuster story that the documentary obviously wasn't really geared towards telling. And while, like, I didn't like that, I did like the fact that they talked specifically about the smell of the Blockbuster.
Yeah.
You can also tell, which we've talked about many times on here. You can also tell that the Lloyd Kaufman interview was not exactly what they wanted, because they kept that very short, and then didn't bring him back till the end.
What they say, and that was five, and that was 1.5 minutes with Lloyd.
112 seconds with Lloyd Kaufman. Yeah, they're like, eh, not worth it.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I'm sorry, but
no, go ahead.
The funny thing though is like, it just realizing how stupid Movie Studios have been throughout history. Like one point of that was just like, yeah, you know, like movies should be $100.
Yeah. They're almost always wrong. I feel like off the start with every decision a studio makes, they're always wrong with the first choice.
Well, so
we'll rectify later.
I did watch a recent thing. So I think, did I talk about it on here? I feel like I don't even know where I talk about things anymore. I think called Yesterworld. It's one of those like theme park video, like YouTube series I watch when they talk about like defunct theme park things. But I definitely talked about this. Anyway, they've ran out of like theme park rides to talk about. So now they're on to other things. And there was a whole one on Disney home video, and they talked about like the reason why Disney made their VHSs so fucking expensive was because they wanted them to only ever be rented, because when they re-released Pinocchio once every 10 years, they want people to go see it in theaters. So they never really wanted, they never wanted anyone to buy the VHSs.
Yeah, but then everybody went back on that with the DVD thing.
Right. I mean, it ended up crumbling, obviously, and then they did the vault and they tried to re-release, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and part of me was wondering, like, you know, that was another thing. I can't remember if they discussed it specifically in the documentaries, but by the time DVDs came out, like, I don't, you know, I'm just assuming VHS tapes cost more to produce than DVDs do, because, like, I'm assuming you have to write the VHS tape and then physically produce it, and there's more material that goes in there, whereas you just, like, you quickly write a DVD, put it in the clamshell, and then sell it for $20. Mm-hmm. So I do think like as the rise of DVD players came and more people became like interested in home theaters, the buying the stuff yourself, like it maybe took a chunk out of it, but it also became more affordable for the rental places too, because now they could, I don't know how much their DVD licenses were, like what the arrangement was on that, but I just couldn't get over them, you know, talking about the $100 VHS tapes, which in like 1980 was probably equivalent to like $275 now, maybe less than maybe $205 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I know. I feel like I've talked a lot. I'm sorry,
it's a fun, quick nostalgia watch. That's it. Like it's mm-hmm. nothing heavy. It's nothing crazy. Not going to blow you away. I think it does drag a bit. At the end, you're like, oh boy, end, please. This is like, I hope they stay open. I'll buy a Blockbuster card from them and send some money their way. And if it wasn't, it's very not accessible for somebody who lives in.
Yes, Manhattan. I was going to say, if it was even like in a
remote, it was closer, I would absolutely go.
Yeah, me too. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I miss it. I missed the smile. I missed the popcorn bucket that you'd put in the microwave and it would only pop half the thing. The entire bottle be burned to a crisp. Like I miss all that.
Them opening containers for both VCRs and DVDs. I just love that feeling, that little click. Like the guy was saying in the thing, that ASMR moment was probably my favorite thing part of the entire thing by far. And it's simple brained, but it's true.
The part where she was like taking apart the computer and stuff was
crazy. Funny. Bro, yeah. That thing was
like
dusty.
The POS, like they have to use that POS. Yeah. And I thought about, I'm like, is there no workaround? Then I did think about like cataloging all that. I was like, I mean, I guess that would be a fucking pain in the ass.
Yeah.
That thing was really damn dusty. That was like from the tech nightmares Reddit or whatever that is.
The beauty of documentaries, no rating. So no rating. Godzilla vs. Kong though, Sunday, HBO Max. Let's do a defunct and discontinued things draft. Ken, Jack, you were last time, so you're first this time, followed by the audience, then myself, then Trill. You're the first pick of the draft. Defunct and discontinued things.
Okay, so I need to pick it because we were just talking about so much Blockbusters, and plus this is going to get that mainstream, the juices flowing for the people that see the graphics. So I'm going to pick Blockbuster. Like for all the reasons we were talking about before, nostalgia-wise, there's like, you know, the smell, the clicking and opening of things, looking at standees, looking at like, I first of all, I think we talked about it, but I never saw the staff picks part ever. I remember from when I can remember being a Blockbuster, but I would always gravitate right to like the action section and just browse everything and want to rent every single one of them. Great feelings, great memories from it. And the video game section, right?
Did you ever go to a Blockbuster that had like windows on one wall and that entire wall of DVD or VHS tapes was just sun bleached?
Yes.
No,
absolutely.
So we had the ones that were near the front window, which were definitely sun bleached. Like they're orange.
Yeah. Well, I just remember the like one of the ones I used to go to had the side and then the section, like they're just completely all the covers were faded. The Hollywood Video. Did you guys ever go to Hollywood Video?
Oh yeah.
Like
there was one in Bristol, Connecticut. I would go to every now and then if I didn't go to Blockbuster.
They had a superior solution for their cases because their cases were like these condoms. They're like these plastic slips. I seem to remember. And you just like put the DVD up in there and they had the cover on it and everything.
I don't remember. I've only been like maybe once.
Hollywood Video bringing back our movie condoms. Audience's pick is surprising. It's a condiment. It's Easy Squirt Ketchup, the ones with the colors, the green,
the purple ketchups.
Yeah. Green and purple, Easy Squirt Ketchup.
They're pretty cool. That's weird for number two overall. Don't like that position, but I did expect it to maybe be here somewhere.
My number one, I'm going food. I'm going with Altoids Sours. Altoids Sours. They come in that fucking metal tin. They look like rocks, those crystal rocks. Those tins, that was like a currency back in the day in middle school. You had a fucking Altoids Sours, you were cool.
Those were delicious.
What's the rationale of getting rid of your best product?
Getting rid of the Altoids Sours?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like,
then you bring it back and make millions.
I don't know what Altoids sales mix looks like per se, but I'd have to imagine, like, I don't exactly see regular Altoids flying off the shelves.
No. What's the last time you had an Altoid?
I'd probably, like, as a bit. Hey, everybody, look, I'm going to eat an Altoid. I'm British.
Some sort of humor. Yeah.
Curiously strong.
Trill, you have number your last pick of round one, first pick of round two.
Which gum brand did the commercial where it was like they have a dirty mouth, clean it up? Orbitz. I just made up a minute where she go like you lint liquor. Who are you calling a something? You lint liquor.
Yeah,
Orbitz. Yep. Okay, Orbitz. Just want to clear it up.
Hey, I'm gonna go Toys R Us. That's a recent one that was taken from us, but it's also. It's tragic for me because I finally get to the age where I have a kid and there's no Toys R Us and it's fun. It was fun going into Toys R Us. I went in to buy video games like before I had a kid.
Me too.
And it's just like, you know, the smell was still there. It's still like some Toys R Us's were nice. Most of them were kind of not, but like all the products and all the colors and all that stuff, it was an experience and you just, it's not the same at other stores. No, I miss it. I miss the old days of Toys R Us, like in the 90s where like you took a ticket for a video game and then had to take it to like the little like locker room, like when they checked out and they gave you the video game. That was fun. And then my second pick, I don't know if you guys remember this on the ticket thing. There was a store called Service Merchandise.
Mm-mm.
Do you remember Service Merchandise was... I love Service Merchandise because everything was a showroom on the floor. And then they wrote up your ticket for what you wanted. And you took out the checkout and they went into the warehouse and they got you your product at the end of it. It was like you were shopping from a catalog in person. It was something.
Dude,
not
Service Merchandise. That was a fucking pull.
I love Service Merchandise. It was a fun shopping experience. It felt like, it felt different. Like, and I couldn't have been too old when they went away, but they used to be one every town I lived in and they no longer exist.
They have an online catalog. It's under the site's under construction. I don't think they do actually.
Or do they have a little GIF of the guy when the sign doing the shoveling?
That's Service Merchandise is not one I would have thought of unless you'd said it. Wow. It's
an awesome logo.
Service Merchandise. My number two is my other food one. The greatest peanut butter snack of all time, PB Crisps. They were like, it was a plant by Planters. They came in this bag. It'd be like a wafer shaped like a peanut. And on the inside, it would be like a peanut butter cream or like a chocolate cream. They're amazing. They have like, there's a Twitter account for it. There's a website. I tweet about it frequently. People always tweet at Planters. When they did the big announcement with Baby Nut last year, people were like, oh, they bring back PB Crisps. I don't understand. But the fire for 3D Doritos was so heavy that maybe PB Crisps will return. PB Crisps were unbelievable. So much so that I looked for getting a package, but I imagine they're not good. Imagine they're stale.
Yeah.
Gross. But yeah, PB Crisp.
I wonder if there's like a homemade recipe for that. One where you have to read through like somebody's entire life story to get to it. There exists somewhere for sure.
Maybe. PB Crisps, I would pay a premium to get those. Audience, their second round pick is Borders. Borders Books.
Borders was inferior to Barnes & Noble's. I'm sorry. There's a reason it's gone. They never made an e-reader.
Joel's a Borders guy, though. You're...
I was a Borders guy. Barnes & Noble felt too nerdy.
No way.
Fancy. Yeah. You went to the store.
Hey, what's the coffee store in Borders?
The coffee store in Borders. No.
Oh, in Borders. I thought you meant Barnes.
No. Come on. Come on.
I don't remember.
Seattle's best. Seattle's
That's right.
best.
That's right.
Seattle's best.
Yeah. No wonder they fucking failed. Losers. Your bitch ass bookstore. Fuck you. Making fun of Barnes and Noble's, calling us nerds.
They're still a real. Okay, so Austin has two very good Barnes and Noble. If you ever want to go to Barnes and Noble and you're in Austin, there's the one in the Arboretum, which is closer to downtown. It's a two level Barnes. It's a classic. It's connected to an open door. GameStop. I almost gave away another future pick in this draft. And then there's another one in Cedar Park by a mall, by my old Blockbuster. And it has that very like you can tell the books aren't totally organized anymore, like that type of look to a Barnes & Noble. Yeah.
Kind of nice. For our Northeastern listeners who make up a majority of our podcast, there is also one in New York City that is very cool on the West Side, a two-story one.
Yes.
If you're ever in the round, give it a
that
visit.
One is
you walk in.
Funko Pop heaven. Fucking Borders has more Funko Pops than any place combined.
I've seen more Funko Pops in that place than like a comic book store, than a figurines, anything like
what if,
that.
There, what if
so many Funko Pops, a cool second store, a Starbucks, anything you want. And when you walk in, you know how like when you walk into an Apple store and they have like the fresh oxygen being pumped in? It's like that, but the Barnes & Noble smell. And it is delicious.
What if Funko Pops was like a subsidy program from the government to like help stores make it look like they have like merchandise?
It's like a, what do you call, WeWork program?
Yeah, it's just like, your store's kind of empty. You need a whole wall of Funko Pops. And these cheap plastic things, they'll fill the void quite nicely.
It's like a Funko Pop of like Frasier's dog. It's like, who is buying this? It's Funko Pop 907, Frasier's dog. Like, who the fuck bought this?
This is like an entire wall of Nathan Fillion Firefly Funko Pops.
I would definitely buy that.
Back-to-back 100%. Picks for you, Ken Jack. End of round two, first of round three.
Okay, first pick, I'm going to do Modell's. Modell's sunk down the drain. Modell's was a great experience to go to, especially like in like, I don't know if you guys would have this, but like in a preseason, you would ask your mom like, or your dad like, I want to go get a pair of cleats. I want to go get like a bat. I want to go get whatever. New baseball gloves. Baseball gloves were always the great one when you got a new, fresh, new pair of baseball gloves. But like going in the store
gloves
and shopping
like around. Batting gloves or
batting gloves. Yeah. No, oh, batting gloves, okay, specifically.
You.
Yeah.
I thought you wore like two baseball gloves.
Every single year I'm renewing my baseball.
He's the ultimate defender. Yeah.
I can't catch unless my glove is not broken in explicitly. The smell of a Modell's and just like the, you know, I just love that place, man. You walk around, you just look at every single item, even though you know you have absolutely no reason whatsoever to buy a tennis racket, but you're looking at tennis rackets, you're looking at everything, all the cleats, all the shoes, everything. And just,
I know what Charles about it. To say.
MC Sports?
No, I just, obviously Modell's is regional.
Yeah,
but you could also put like, I'm not going to pick it. Sports Authority is obviously another one.
Sports Authority was on my list for sure. Sports Authority is definitely on my list, but it's too big. I like Modell's. It's more intimate.
Yeah, like MC Sports was kind of like that. MC Sports, I don't know if MC Sports is regional, but there's a smaller sporting goods store that had the rubber sporting goods smell to it. The sporting goods stores aren't the same anymore. Dick's,
and that's the only one left.
It doesn't feel like a sporting goods store when you go in there. It's like, you know,
a Target.
I miss the days where you walk.
Yeah, Dick's feels way too corporate and doesn't have the It doesn't have the feel to it.
No, it doesn't have like, you know, you don't walk in and then immediately see bikes hanging from the ceiling or whatever. The best sporting goods stores of all time. I don't know which one. I always like Galleons, but Galleons like kind of were higher end. They had a climbing wall in them. That was also an Indiana thing for the most part.
There's something about Modell's that was just very endearing to me always. There's one in my complex, actually directly across from a Barnes & Noble, I want to say in Bayshore, but that one is awesome. And I think I actually recently watched an episode of Undercover Boss with the founder of Models, and it was very funny because he was very positive about the outlook for the future, and boy, was it was not good. Got destroyed by dicks.
Jeff, did you
absolutely
think
lathered on by dicks?
Jeff, do you think I was going to go for the 8-story sports mart in Chicago?
No, I'm surprised you didn't. Yeah, surprised you have. Well, you could still. Ken Jack, yeah, first pick, round three.
I'm going to go MoviePass. MoviePass,
Okay.
MoviePass, a bell that I rung many a time and an exploited AMC out of a lot of money. Sorry I've done that now in retrospect, considering their recent troubles. But I made more than probably 20 times the amount of investment I put into MoviePass back by getting free movies and free food and snacks and concessions with AMC points. MoviePass was awesome. And for that one glimmer of like a 2-year period, it was absolutely, it was unbeatable, an unbeatable moment for moviegoers all around the world.
MoviePass was, it was amazing. I still like my AMCA list though. It's not as unlimited, but you know, still pretty good.
It's also, you're very much paying for what you get for with that. You were getting much more than you paid.
That's very true. Audience number three is Kudos, the bars. Not very much like Chewy bars, but not really.
We talked about it before because it was like it's how to con your parents into getting you candy.
Yes. Yeah, Kudos were better than granola bars and better than Chewy bars. They were more candy-like.
Because there's a candy bar. Yeah,
but they had a granola bar vibe. So you could easily say, like, I'm going to get some granola bars for lunch. And your mom would be like, okay. Even though she would probably, like, my mom would have let me just have, like, 5 Snickers in my lunchbox for lunch.
coated with chocolate syrup, coated with M&Ms, just like a pure.
And there were chocolate covered Kudos too.
Yeah. Oh, those are really good. Damn.
Kudos had good variety packs. Yeah, very good. My number three, I'm gonna go with Toy Store. I'm gonna go KB Toys. KB Toys had a much different feel than Toys R Us. More intimate setting, usually in the corner of a mall, so right outside of a department store. Typically the location. Well, I'm thinking of West Farms Mall in Connecticut, though that mall is very bougie now. Used to be by this big ABC's like tower. It was all A to Z, this massive like 30-foot tower. KB Toys is awesome. And then KB Toys, there are still some around like a little bit, like they're kind of like discount clearance toy stores, but KB Toys, they gave you everything you got at a Toys R Us, but in a much more compact setting in a mall. Now that's what you got. I love KB Toys. Trill, you have back-to-back picks here.
Okay, I'm going to go with Nike Town. Yeah. So not the Nike
store.
Won't
you take me to?
I'm talking about Nike Town. So when I lived in the Chicago suburbs, my parents took me into Chicago every now and then, right? It's not that far. You know, we get on the Metro train and we go in, we do the tourist stuff in Michigan Avenue. And Nike Town was spectacular. Back in the 90s, Nike Town was a store, and it felt like the store had a personality. And, you know, it was still in the same location. It's just now a Nike store. But instead of it retaining the personality of the Nike Town, which felt like an experience, they've just made the Nike store into a big version of other Nike stores. Nike Town felt unique. It felt like every section was differently themed around the sport. And now it just feels like you're going into a regular Nike store. I don't like it. No, they had basketball. There's a basketball court in there. It's like a basketball court in Nike Town. It was neat. Mm. It was cool. It also had a Sony store right next to it. I don't think that's there anymore. I don't know.
Probably not. You remember when Disney had the Disney Quest in Chicago?
I feel like, short-lived. I don't think I went to it, but
they were going to expand that to New York, expand it to Philadelphia. They never did though.
Hmm.
You have back-to-back picks though. What's your next one?
My next pick is Nintendo Power Magazine.
Oh yeah. That's a good pick. That's a good pick.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a man of taste. My preference in game magazines were Electronic Gaming Monthly. I felt like it was a little more refined for the older gamer when I was a kid, and I was more on the wavelength I was on. But Nintendo Power still was good because if you wanted honest game opinions straight from the PR wing of Nintendo America,
yep.
You knew where to turn. But it's like everything else with Nintendo. It's comforting in its familiarity. Mm-hmm. You had your favorite old characters there, and you got your first looks at all the Nintendo games like Mario 64. Like that was where you got it. It was from Nintendo Power. So it was always nice to read Nintendo Power, even though, you know, it wasn't a real magazine in the sense that, like, I don't know if, you know, it was owned by Nintendo is what I'm trying to say. It's like WWE magazine. It's like, you're not
gonna Mario was dead, right?
I heard Luigi killed him. Can you imagine
the power play by Luigi? Yeah.
Can you imagine Nintendo just announcing the death of Mario in like Nintendo Power magazine? You're 9 years old and you go out to your mailbox because it's like the 15th of the month and you know a new Nintendo Power's in there. You open it up and it's all black cover that says like Mario 1954 through 1996.
Great angry video game nerd video is him talking Nintendo Power. Very nostalgic, which actually I watched because the YouTube algorithm suggested me watching Angry Video Game Nerd in Bend, Oregon at the last Blockbuster. But yeah, he complains about like they changed the spine so you didn't see the number of the magazine anymore. And
the Power Glove one was also very good. I watched that again recently.
They're all fantastic.
You need to watch The Wizard. I've talked about it before.
I think both of us have seen this.
I think it's Fred Savage movie where he's really good at video games and then he stops like to play video games with his rival and his video game pulls out the Power Glove and starts playing a racing game with the Power Glove.
Yeah, I've seen The Wizard. You could win a set visit to the Wizard in Nintendo Power. That's something I learned in Angry Video Game Nerd. My number four is also, it's candy. Again, I'm back to food. It's Butterfinger BBs. Butterfinger BBs were a legendary movie theater snack. They're better than anything Butterfinger has ever done with their bar. Bart Simpson was on the cover. He was in the commercial. He'd always be beating the shit out of Homer, eating the Butterfinger BBs. They were great. They're a better iteration than what they have now at the bar. Another one, I don't know why they don't bring it back. And I'm not going to pick this, but remember Reese's Bites? Do you remember those? They were just like bite-sized circle, like ball Reese's peanut butter cups.
I don't remember that.
Also, somebody on the LCB Reddit, this one I'm not going to put up there, but Wonka made Wonka Donuts, D-O-N-U-T-Z, and Wonka Donuts were just like chocolate circles with sprinkles on it. They were supposed to look like donuts. They were shitty. That's my pick. Audience number four, they're going back to stores, but this is a restaurant. It's Rainforest Cafe. The Rainforest Cafe. Which most are
closed. They're still kind of around, though.
Most are all are closed, though. I'm going to allow that pick.
Let's just say, I think in order to, something has to have passed its spiritual heyday, and that definitely has.
Mm. Ken Jack, last two picks for you.
Okay, my last two are two video game studios that have gone defunct. The first one is Pandemic Studios. Pandemic Studios made, in a one-year span, they made Star Wars Battlefront. They made Mercenaries. They made Destroy All Humans, and they made Star Wars Battlefront 2, just from 2004 to 2005. Then they got bought by EA in 2009, and they just basically sold them off for shit in 2 years. So that studio was responsible at the very least between the Battlefront, Mercenaries, and I like Destroy All Humans, but it's not on the same level as those other two. Still a very good game. But between Battlefront 1 and 2 and Mercenaries, I've spent an unbelievable amount of playtime on those three games combined, and they were great, and the studio got sold for fucking scraps, and that's a goddamn shame. And next is Ensemble Studios. Ensemble Studios made Age of Empires, which is one of my favorite RTS games ever, and they made Age of Mythology, also one of my favorite RTS games ever, and they just weren't able to translate that success into just games in the future for PCs. And I miss them. I still play Age of Empires and I still play Age of Mythology very frequently. Like, I'll just go down like once a year, I'll just hit that 1 month or like 1 month of the year where I'm like, I need to play Rome Total War or I need to play Age of Empires right now. And then I just binge through the entire campaign and I have to do it. And it's just, they're very, very impactful. All those games all my childhood. So had to pick them.
All right. Round it out. Let's move on to game studios. Audience had a tie for their last one. Walden Books was one of them. Pepsi Blue was another one, And then I'm going to give it to this one because we talked about the other day, Trill, and that's Snackwell Devil's Food Cookies. Amazing. Bring them back. Fuck the new recipe. Nobody wants the marshmallow. Hell yeah.
I just, I loved Walden Books too. Yeah, not Walden Books too, but I loved it as well.
Yeah, Walden Books had a more, I think, like down to earth vibe to it,
which is nice. I would just go straight to the comic section and
Walden Books always had incredibly tall walls too. Like I feel like their bookshelves were not very tall. Like they didn't go up very high. It just felt like the walls were very tall with empty space in Walden Books. Magazines always in the back left. At a Walden specifically.
Yeah, then you got to get people to walk through the store.
Yep. My last pick, I'm going to combine. I'm going supersize / biggie size food at McDonald's and Wendy's. Fuck that guy. Fuck that movie. Stupid movie. The sequel was dumb as well.
Super High Me, much better.
Better Stuff movie.
Vincent Hive, stand up.
Super size fries were awesome. And biggie size is still, and they call it the biggie bag now, but they can't really do what they used to do. So supersized and biggie size food items. Trill, your last thing. And then I'm going to read off everyone that didn't get put in here because I have to.
Okay. My last thing is EA Sports Big sub-label video games.
Yeah. Can you do the thing with what they would say in the beginning?
EA Big?
No.
I don't remember what they said. It was
EA Sports. And they went big. And he really fucking emphasized it.
Oh, that's right. I played a lot of NFL Street, NFL Street 2, NBA Street, SSX, SSX Tricky. All those games were super fun. They're probably not very good video games. You go back and play them, they sucked. Like NFL Street was frustrating because it had one of those catch-up engines where the computer would start cheating if you were winning. And they, you know, like NFL Blitz had, where someone could chase you down 90 yards because all of a sudden they started running a 3740. But they were fun. Like the arcade style of game is a lot of fun. And I feel like that's something we don't get anymore. Sports games, we either just have dull yearly iterations of stuff that's supposed to be simulations, or we have games where you buy cards of players and then play as the characters, or you have games on your phone where you do microtransactions.
You want Blitz the League back is what you're telling me. You want Blitz the League to return.
Ricky Williams was unstoppable in NFL.
Unbeatable. My God.
You know, even the SSX games were a whole lot of fun. Like that original SSX that came out for the PlayStation was really good. The SSX Tricky was probably the best one in the series. Mm-hmm. Again, they're probably shit if you go back and play them right now. But for the time, like I really wish that was like a viable segment of video gaming now, where like you could justify the development of one of these fun sports games that really aren't too deep. And it would, you know, be visually fun to play, and it would have a gameplay loop that was rewarding, but you probably can't. The economics just don't make sense anymore. So I get why it's not there, but I still miss that, like that golden age of like PlayStation 2 era video gaming, where it always felt like there was some video game for you to be in, new video game for you to be interested in.
Mm-hmm. SSX Tricky sounds fun as shit. All right, here's what didn't get picked. Here we go. Ready? Barbecue Ruffles, Berries and Cream, Dr. Pepper, Lifesaver Cream Savers. Remember those?
Those are gone.
Old people in heaven.
Pinwheel.
They're still around.
Yeah. Pinwheel Cream Savers. Yeah.
Is that what it was? Pinwheel cream save?
No, they had the pinwheel pattern. You know, they had a pleasant coloration.
Candy cigarettes, which are still around if you go to Cracker Barrel. Coca-Cola C2, which was like half Diet Coke, half regular Coke.
That's so stupid. Coke, dumbest things ever.
Crystal Pepsi, garbage. Yeah.
Coke had a whole department of people that were like, what if you mix Coke with other things? Like, what can we do?
Okay.
Coke Life.
But
Coke
Pepsi did that too. But Pepsi also had the elite cover of, was it Coke that did the lemon twist? It was Pepsi Twist. Wasn't it Pepsi Twist?
I think they all did lemon for a while.
No, but there was one called, I believe, Pepsi Twist, and it had elite branding. Like, it just looked so appealing. Fuck, I think
Pepsi had a half died
remix.
Well,
Sprite got really remixed. Sprite.
I feel like it's already remixed. Just Sprite.
Pepsi next. That's right. I'm gonna keep going. Crystal Pepsi, Discman, Double Dip Crunch cereal, which was Crispix dipped in two different things. I forgot that. I never had it, but I've seen it before. Dreamcast, Dunkaroos, those are kind of back. Ecto Cooler, Eggo waffles. They were like the stuffed Eggo waffles. Flip phones, floppy disks, Four Loko, the original one, Game Boys, any iteration, Gatorade All-Stars, Grips, that was like the small snack, that was like little bits of like Cheez-Its and stuff, it was like in a small like silver tube, 3D Doritos, obviously in the tube, iPod Color, remember when the iPod was like really revved up,
iPod Color.
Good iPod, It was the like the iPod. They had the mini, and they had like different colors and stuff. Like the outside, oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. This is the in between gen, yeah.
iPod, yeah. Mighty Beans, Oreo Cakesters, Oreo Creamsters were good too. Pepsi Blue, Pepsi Twist. There you go. Philadelphia Cheesecake, snack bars, Pizza Hut, Big New Yorker pizza. Do you remember those commercials? Has to remember those commercials.
With Big Donald New Yorker. Trump?
I don't know if it was Trump. I thought it was just like a very stereotype.
I thought the Trump one.
I thought the Big New Yorker was a stereotype New York.
So I feel like Trump did a.
He did stuffed crust.
The stuffed crust. And then he also did the McDonald's commercial back in like the 90s with Grimace.
Grimace, you no good.
I remember it was just him and his arm around Grimace, and they're just looking out of the New York skyline.
The Pizza Hut Big New Yorker pizza was like this real stereotype, like New Yorker kid on his stoop. He's like, I fold my pizza. And that's like, that was the Big New Yorker. Pogs.
Pogs
are still around. They're still around.
Pogs are fucking shit. Like if you say Pogs, you don't actually remember Pogs.
Come on,
man. Pokemon cards, the original mouth. Pokemon cards, Polaroid cameras, PSPs, PS Vitas.
Polaroid cameras are still around.
PS Vitas, yeah, but not like they used to be.
Heather Dunbar, come here. I'm playing Kane and Lynch.
Yeah, but like Polaroid now is like, it's only out of nostalgia.
It's Instamax, but people are still using them. I feel like not like as much as
not like the old camera, like really fucking shitty, like really garbage ones. Yeah, Skip-Its, Surge, Vault Energy Drink, Wonder Balls. Back when Wonder Balls could like have a lot of cool shit in it. Zima. My uncle worked for Miller Coors still, and Zima was in the house back when I was a young lad. My uncle's Swoops. We talked about that last time. That was like the Pringles, but they were candy, like Reese's, York, and then. Locations, Ames, Brookstone, Caldor, Circuit City, Discovery Zone. Surprised you didn't pick that drill. East India Trading Company, East Bay, the catalog, EB Games, ESPN Zone, FYE.
East Bay is a huge miss.
Yeah, Hollywood Video, Gadzooks. I'm surprised you didn't pick that one. Radio Shack, Sam Goody, Sears, Showbiz Pizza, Sports Authority, Sharper Image, Walden Books, WB Store, and then Zoo Pals.
The guy's back. He's looking for more Michigan J Frog plushies.
he said he'll buy the whole lot.
He's gonna buy all the Michigan.
Do you want to replace anything with East Bay? That's such a.
I love that East Bay catalog. It was
nothing like that one page of all just generic color T-shirts.
Yeah, the last three pages of the catalog were pretty shitty, but the like the fall catalog. Ooh,
those are. I'm trying to think.
Catalogs in the fall or whenever.
There's an old store in Bristol, Connecticut called Eblin's. I don't know if anyone knows that.
I looked it up and it said that cheesy fiesta potatoes were gone. But when I looked it up on the Taco Bell site, it said they were still there.
They brought them back.
Yeah, they came back like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, thank God. Fuddruckers was on my list. Remember Fuddruckers? And the other version of it from Idiocracy, which was very funny.
Fuddruckers still around though.
Yeah, they did chapter. They did a chapter 11, but I think it was a restructuring chapter 11, and they're still in operation.
The list I looked at said they were defunct. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, they all gone? I thought they were going to try to restructure.
I was not. Right, I mean, specifically not to look up a. Hey, an
if you're looking
list.
It up, I trust
a defunct
you.
List. No, don't been, trust me.
I haven't
I'm
been
saying.
Keeping up with my Fuddruckers news. Apparently,
I guess the, not.
I miss the old like. 10,000 square feet Fuddruckers go in. They're like in warehouses.
You're like in a Costco there to get some substandard wings.
Well, all right. This has been fun. This has been nostalgic. Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Nope. Kong versus Godzilla. Godzilla versus Kong. That Close is going enough. To be our review on Sunday. I'm very excited to talk about that. Might have to have Coley on.
Skull Island.
Coley has a lot of takes on that.
He sure does.
That's it. Ken, Jack, and Trill. Oh, also an interview with Topher Grace on Sunday.
Yeah, that's
Ken,
right.
Jack, and Trill. I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you next
time. Have a good week at the box office. We'll be right back.
I can't get back to you.